Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals now in session. Judge Wheelock, Judge Bradfold, Judge Cochran, the Honorable Sarah I. Wheelock.
Please be seated. Good morning. I assume the mics are working today? Okay, great. So good morning and welcome to everyone to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Tuesday, September 20th, 2022. As the marshal noted, I am Sarah Wheelock. I'm sitting today on a panel with Judges Diane Bradfold and Jeannie Cochran. We have four cases on the calendar today, all of which are scheduled for oral argument. And we'll get started with the first one shortly. Oral arguments are recorded by the court, and so those recordings will be available within approximately 24 hours on the Minnesota Judicial Branch's website. With that, Marshall, please call the first case.
Our first case this morning is 822-0507 in the matter of a public safety officer death benefit for Jerome Richard Landing.
Counsel, as you probably know, you each have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes. The podium at the center can be adjusted up and down, so feel free to do that when you get there. The podium also has a clock on it that will be counting your time down, so that's available for your reference. At the beginning of your argument, please identify yourself and identify your client clearly for our recording. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Joshua Harrison, and I represent appellant Cynthia Langan. This case comes before this court after a determination by the administrative law judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings that the death of Deputy Jerome Lannon did not qualify as killed in the line of duty for purposes of the public safety officer death benefit and granted respondent summary disposition. Evaluations of a public safety officer benefit case is a two-step process. The first step is to determine whether the officer in question's death met the definition of killed in the line of duty. And the second step is to determine whether there are any statutory exclusions that would exclude an otherwise qualifying death from being compensable. This analysis did not occur, and the administrative law judge erred for two reasons. First, the administrative law judge ignored the judicially established definition of killed in the line of duty and erroneously held that the term is statutorily defined. And second, the administrative law judge added a requirement to qualifying for killed in the line of duty that the legislature did not include in the statute. Accordingly, Ms. Lannon asked this court to reverse the grant of summary disposition and remand this case to the Office of Administrative Hearings for a contested case proceeding. Your Honors, benefits for the families of officers who are killed in the line of duty was first created in 1973. Although eligibility...
So Mr. Harrison, I apologize for interrupting you, and I hope you can hear me all right.
Yes.
I am actually having a little trouble. Your voice is... Maybe it's just you're quiet spoken, and I appreciate that. But if you just speak up a little bit more.
Yes,
thank
Judge.
You. And then I just want to ask you if you would start things out by talking to us about the definition of killed in the line of duty. And what your source is for that definition. Thank you.
Yes, Judge. Killed in the line of duty was not statutorily defined when the benefit was first created in 1973 or in the current statute. Because the phrase was not statutorily defined, the Minnesota Supreme Court was called upon to define the term in three key cases.
So, counsel, when you say the term was not statutorily defined, I think you would agree that 299A.41 subdivision 3 does provide provision for killed in the line of duty?
Subdivision 3 does address killed in the line of duty. However, Judge, that language is not definitional language.
Even though subdivision 1 says the definitions used in this section apply to 299A.41 to 299A.46.
Yes, Judge. Although the heading does say definition, the language is what the Minnesota Supreme Court has clearly identified as exclusionary language that does not define what the Minnesota legislature meant when they wrote the phrase killed in the line of duty.
The language is more than just exclusionary. It also is inclusionary. Would you agree with that?
No, Judge. The language's purpose is to exclude certain natural causes deaths. And to define the contours of that exclusion, it has to explain what is being excluded, namely all natural cause deaths that are not certain heart attacks, strokes, or vascular ruptures, and then all accidental deaths that are not that do not occur while acting as a public safety officer.
There's also a sentence, though, that says, in the case of a public safety officer, killed in the line of duty includes the death of a public safety officer caused by accidental means while the public safety officer is acting in the course and scope of the duties as a public safety officer. So when I suggested that there is inclusionary language as well as exclusionary language, that's what I was referring to.
Understood, Judge. Under the definition of killed in the line of duty produced by the Minnesota Supreme Court, any accidental death that resulted in part from the performance of hazardous duties would qualify as killed in the line of duty. The language in Subdivision 3 excludes certain accidental deaths that do not occur while on duty. So its purpose isn't to include or expand or define what the Minnesota legislature meant when they wrote killed in the line of duty. It is to exclude otherwise qualifying deaths, despite the fact that it does use the word include instead of the word exclude in the sentence.
So it's your position then that we would look to Kramer for the definition, the Kramer decision?
Your Honor, I would direct the court to look to the decision in Johnson v. Plainview in 1988, where the Minnesota Supreme Court completed the final definition of killed in the line of duty after defining the word killed in Onler versus Peace Officer Benefit Fund in 1980 and defining in the line of duty in Kramer in 1986. In Johnson v. Plainview, the court produced the definition of killed in the line of duty that is any death of a public safety officer that results, at least in part, because of the performance of hazardous duties, qualifies.
And how do you think the Johnson definition differs from the Kramer definition?
Your Honor, it appears that the court expanded the definition from hazards of being killed to just hazardous duties where there's a risk or an increased risk of injury, which makes sense, because if there's a risk of injury, naturally any injury can progress, combine, or deteriorate and lead to death. And then the Johnson definition made clear that the death of the officer does not need to relate solely to the performance of hazardous duties. As long as those duties contributed, that death still qualifies. In that case, two officers died as a result of pre-existing conditions and the performance of hazardous duties. This definition that has been created is flexible and has never contained a list of qualifying manners of death. Instead, it directs courts to look to the duties that were performed when the officer was on duty, determine whether they were hazardous, and determine whether those duties contributed to the death. That is the analysis to be conducted in a public safety officer benefit case, Your Honors. At no point in the statute's history or the definition has there ever been a list or a requirement that a specific manner of death be listed. And this definition was directly tailored to the intent of the legislation, which is to recognize that public safety officers face unique hazards in the performance of their duties and to compensate the families of those officers should those hazards contribute to their death. This definition is still the definition courts should use because of the operation of Statute 645.17. That statute provides presumptions for courts to use when evaluating the language of a statute. The presumption provides that when a court of last resort has construed the language of a law, the legislature intends the same construction of that language to be used in subsequent laws on the same subject matter. As the highest court in the land, the Minnesota Supreme Court is a court of last resort. The court construed the language of a law, namely what killed in the line of duty means. And 299A is a subsequent law on the same subject matter because it is now where the benefit is codified.
So, counsel, assuming we agree with your argument that we are look to the case law for the definition of in the line of duty, can you point me to the language in Johnson that you think defines in the line of duty?
Yes, Judge. It is on page 5, Your Honor, where the court states that given the fund was established to recognize the sacrifices made by peace officers in performing hazardous work in protection of the public, any death which results in part from the performance of such work should qualify for fund benefits.
Okay, so yeah, I want to talk about that language because so that's the last sentence of that paragraph right before the conclusion. And it says, any death which results in part from the performance of such work should, not does, should qualify for fund benefits. So that's why I'm wondering, you know, did the court in Johnson really modify the definition from Kramer? Because it does, the court in Johnson does state that in Kramer, we define the phrase killed in the line of duty to mean a death resulting from the performance of those duties peculiar to a peace officer that exposed the officer to the hazard of being killed. And I agree that in the Johnson court, the court considered whether the stressful activities were a contributing factor, so it didn't have to be the sole factor, but I guess I'm wondering about how we should interpret the word should in that sentence that you quoted to me.
In this case, there was a determination of whether the officers in question in Johnson met the definition of killed in line of duty that must be established first in stating when officers should qualify for benefits. That in essence is stating the definition, Judge. If they did not meet the definition, the court would not have directed that they should be entitled to benefits.
Okay, thank you. How does timing factor into the analysis? In other words, the time from the exposure to the performance of the hazardous duties to the time of death?
Your Honor, unless there is specific exclusionary language designating a time frame, the time between injury and death has no relation into whether an officer was killed in line of duty. In Kramer, the officer in question suffered a work-related injury, kept working for years, was retired for over a year when the initial injury eventually contributed to his death. The time that had elapsed and the fact that he had retired entirely from law enforcement had no impact on the analysis of whether he was killed in the line of duty.
Did the court even though reach that question? Because in Kramer, the court based its decision on the fact that the officer was engaged in the ordinary activity of administrative office routine at the time he suffered the first heart attack, and therefore concluded that it didn't fall within the definition because of killed in the line of duty because it wasn't that type of hazardous duty that the court defined the definition to include.
Yes, Your Honor. The court did not explicitly state that the duty status and that was immediately disqualifying. However, it can also be seen in Johnson, where one of the officers had a heart attack while at the scene of an emergency, was hospitalized for a week, was released from the hospital, and was at home eating dinner when he had a stroke, which combined with the heart attack resulted in death. The fact that there had been some time that had passed, the fact that a stroke had also occurred, and the fact that the officer was at home eating dinner had no impact, and the officer was deemed killed in the line of duty.
So we've had a lot of questions for you, and I know you argued that at the beginning of your argument that the administrative law judge added a requirement that was not included in the statute. I did want to talk briefly about that. Can you expand on that a bit? And then I'd probably have a question for you related to that.
Yes, Judge. Throughout the 49-year history of the benefit, there has never been a manner of death listed in the statute that was not being excluded by the legislature. There has never been a manner of death listed in the statute to demonstrate that it qualifies. So when the administrative law judge created the requirement that suicide must specifically be enumerated in statute, it went against the basic framework of the statute, where only the manners of death that are being excluded to some degree are listed.
So did the administrative law judge actually state that, or did the administrative law judge conclude that in the top paragraph on page 14 that the administrative law judge seems to conclude that because PTSD and depression are not themselves fatal conditions and were not the immediate cause of Deputy Lannon's death, that the death was, even if related to the PTSD, was not a death in the line of duty. So it seems to me that the administrative law judge is basically saying that the PTSD was not the proximate cause of his death.
First, Your Honor, because this was at the summary disposition stage, a decision as to what the proximate cause of death should have been resolved in Ms. Lannon's favor. So if that's what the administrative law judge did, summary disposition was inappropriate and should be reversed. I would direct you, though, Judge, to the next paragraph directly below the one you just stated, where it says, it is for the legislature to decide whether to offer a public safety officer death benefit to the survivors of an officer who commits suicide and to establish the standards by which a claim for benefits under those circumstances must be evaluated. At this time, the statute makes no such provision. That is clearly a requirement that in order to qualify, suicide must be specifically enumerated in statute with the contours of any exclusions being designated.
Could that also be read? I'm sorry, can I just ask?
I see I'm out of time, Judge. Sure.
You definitely accurately have communicated that language, but could that also be read to mean, you know, given that the administrative law judge discusses both the language of the statute and the case law interpreting that language, that that's her interpretation of the statute as opposed to the, so that her interpretation of the statute in conjunction with this case law makes no provision for this situation.
Yes, Judge. If that's the case, the administrative law judge misidentified exclusionary language, which has been contained in every version of the statute, as definitional language, and then erroneously concluded that there needs to be more exclusionary language in order for a certain manner of death to be included, which is contrary to the nature of the statute, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
one
please.
One more question. Just for you to think about for your rebuttal. Your breakdown between exclusionary language and definitional language, if you would comment in your rebuttal on whether you see that reflected in either any of the Minnesota Supreme Court decisions.
Yes, Judge.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And now we will turn to counsel for respondent, and the clock has been reset. Again, feel free to adjust the podium as you need and begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, William Young, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Department of Public Safety. We are here today to interpret a statutory benefits claim, and so it makes sense that we are mired deep in the words of the statute. And the statute includes several provisions that discuss language that is both inclusionary and exclusionary, as Judge Cochran has mentioned. At the outset, the statute says killed in the line of duty excludes deaths from natural causes, and then provides some exceptions as listed below. There's no argument that Deputy Lannan's death, while tragic, was by natural causes. The statute then says that killed in the line of duty includes, and as inclusionary language, accidental deaths while in the course and scope of duties as a public safety officer. Again, there's no argument that Deputy Lannan's death occurred while he was acting in the course and scope of his duties as a public safety officer. Then that final language is more exclusionary language, or actually now inclusionary language. It says the exception to the natural causes is for heart attacks, strokes, and vascular ruptures that occurred within 24 hours of a stressful or strenuous non-routine activity, either a law enforcement activity or a training activity. And so it, again, includes more.
But counsel, though, you would agree that the killed in the line of duty language in 299A.41 is not all-encompassing.
Absolutely. There's that exclusionary language, there's the inclusionary language, and we are mired somewhere in the middle.
So then wouldn't we look to Kramer and Johnson for guidance as to the meaning of, you know, as an error-correcting court, we are bound by the Supreme Court's precedent. And so wouldn't we look to Kramer and Johnson for the definition except to the extent that it's been modified by any subsequent amendment of that killed in the line of duty language?
Yes, and the legislature did amend the statute in 2016. In the sentence from Johnson that opposing counsel read, there's a footnote concluding that the should versus does sentence that you questioned. And there's a footnote advising the legislature, if you mean something else, go amend it. The legislature did do that in 2016 and added that temporal time frame, the 24-hour time frame that wasn't in the statute before. And so it kind of narrowed the claims a little bit. The legislature also, in statute 299A.475, added PTSD benefits for peace officers who do not die but who then have to retire or on disability. So again, it suggests the legislature knew how to do this. They could have easily added that exact same sentence when they amended 299A.41, and they chose not to. Oh, maybe they chose not to, but it is not for a court to read in language that the legislature omitted, whether intentionally or inadvertently.
And but so, you would agree that all they did in the 2006 amendment was narrow the scope of the exclusion for natural causes. They didn't provide an all-encompassing definition.
Correct.
Or yes. An all-encompassing exclusion.
Yes, we have a big gray area that they did not. They said, here's some inclusions, here's some exclusions, and we still have, they do not have an exhaustive list one way or the other of in or out, for lack of a better way to describe it.
And the death at issue here doesn't fall within the natural causes language. So aren't we left with the definition in Kramer and Johnson?
We are, and we also have the language of it can't be an accidental death, or it can be an accidental death. This wasn't an accidental death, unfortunately. We also have the fact that this didn't occur during the course and scope of his duties, and we have the fact that, well, let me pause for a minute and kind of catch my thought here. We have the Kramer analysis, and it is correct that in Kramer, the heart attack that was ultimately analyzed was done, the fatal heart attack occurred several years after the initial on-duty heart attack that occurred during administrative activity. But we do have the fact, I completely went blank there for a minute. In interpreting Kramer, we have the narrower Johnson interpretation, well, not narrower, but in Johnson, we had a very clear connection between law enforcement activity and death. As the ALJ notes, they were fighting fires at the time of their heart attacks. Even if they were from a pre-existing condition they weren't aware of, they were actively engaged in their law enforcement functions at the time of the triggering event that ultimately led to the death of the two firefighters.
The court, though, didn't limit the definition to just those circumstances. So given the definition from, let's start with the definition in Kramer. Explain to me why, you know, viewing the facts in the light most favorable to Deputy Lannan, why his death wouldn't fall within the definition adopted in Kramer of killed in the line of duty.
The definition adopted in Kramer talks about being engaged in hazardous work that could cause a death. And the only record evidence here we have for Deputy Lannan's career was that he apparently was shot at while working as a law enforcement officer in Iowa in the mid-90s before he joined the Washington County Sheriff's Office. In Johnson, there's that subsequent sentence, the should sentence, and whether that's a modification or not, then we have the record here showing that when Deputy Lannan had his car accident and was talking to medical personnel in response, he said, I may have some PTSD from a car accident from some police work. We really have no
connection. Well, we do have Dr. Correll opining that Deputy Lannan suffered from PTSD, that the mental health conditions were, those mental health conditions were a result of his career in law enforcement, and those mental health conditions very likely led to his death. So viewing that evidence in the light most favorable to Deputy Lannan, why wouldn't that be a death resulting from the performance of his duties as peculiar to a peace officer that exposed him to the hazard of being killed?
And that goes back to the ALJ's interpretation of the statute, that there seems to be some sort of intervening step. Deputy Lannan had not been working for several months. The cause of his death was...
Isn't that a fact question? You know, ultimately, whether the death resulted from the PTSD that he experienced as a result of being exposed to the hazardous duties?
Well, and as the ALJ notes, when the medical examiner listed PTSD and depression as other contributing factors, that there was that proximate cause analysis in the professional guidelines of medical examiners. It's cited in the footnote of the ALJ's order. The MDH's publication, Cause of Death and Death Certificate, it talks about how things that are listed as other contributing factors did not result in the underlying cause of death.
Well, but again, we have Dr. Correll's opinion that the PTSD very likely did result to his cause of death. So if we look to that document that you're discussing, which I recognize is in the record, doesn't that involve a weighing of the evidence, which isn't appropriate at this point in the proceeding for the ALJ to rely only on that and ignore the Dr. Correll's opinion?
Well, the ALJ did not weigh evidence. The ALJ made all conclusions or found all facts in favor of
But Deputy the Lannan. ALJ ignored, in that footnote, there's no discussion of Dr. Correll's opinion. So the ALJ seems to be interpreting this cause of death publication without reference to the other evidence in the record regarding what his cause of death was. And you know, this publication is very general. There's no medical testimony about how to interpret this particular death certificate in conjunction with the medical publication. Or maybe there is, and I missed it, but help me out here.
Well, in the finding of facts section of the order, the ALJ discusses Dr. Correll's opinion. She also discusses Ms. Jordan's opinion, the social worker who had worked with Deputy Lannan. But then she does that statutory analysis, and she acknowledges both of them find that the suicide was the cause of death. There's no dispute about that. And she applied that plain language of the statute, the exclusions and the inclusions, and said there's, in applying Kramer and Johnson, there's such a gap.
But she didn't fully apply Kramer and Johnson, did she? I mean, she didn't apply that definition. She just kind of distinguished the cases.
Well, she quotes to the definition in Kramer on, I believe it was page 13 of the order, the ALJ's order. And she doesn't have the subsequent Johnson decision, but she talks in page 13, paragraph 2, I believe. Paragraph 2, she starts with the language from the statute. No, I'm sorry. The first sentence in paragraph 2, she discusses Kramer, resulting from the performance of those duties peculiar to a peace officer that exposed the officer to the hazard of being killed. Now, again, there's that subsequent language from Johnson that seems to broaden that slightly. But she does do that analysis, and then she discusses in that same paragraph Johnson and makes her explanations as to why Johnson doesn't apply. Now, admittedly, she cites it as Jenkins, but she talks about, she distinguishes Johnson, notes that in Johnson, again, the firefighters were actively in law enforcement duty, and there's sort of a straight line between their performance and their subsequent deaths, whereas she distinguishes and said there's such a huge gap here, we don't know.
So, but help me understand why that isn't a fact question. You know, it's as to whether the PTSD was the cause of his death. The job-related PTSD, rather, is, I should be more precise.
I think the ALJ looked at, again, looked at...
I mean, the ALJ seemed to be focused on the temporal piece of it.
The fact question, the question is how
far... And proximate cause, but those, you know, the proximate cause seems to be a fact question.
So my understanding is when the legislature amended the statute and added that temporal time frame for natural causes deaths, they've added a temporal time frame here. There is such a broad theoretical gap, if there is a proximate cause, that perhaps the ALJ thought it was maybe too tenuous. We have, the record has undisputed evidence of so many intervening activities with Deputy Lannan injuring his back off-duty in a motor vehicle accident off-duty, that I believe the ALJ maybe just, they found such a tenuous gap that thought that it wasn't a proximate cause.
And is that appropriate considering the evidence in the light most favorable to Deputy Lannan and Dr. Correll's opinion that his death was very likely caused by the job-related PTSD?
If the question is a strictly statutory interpretation question, it would be appropriate. If there is a proximate cause component, if there is an open window where any law enforcement activity at any point can subsequently trigger a claim months, years, decades later, then it would be appropriate. I would note that in Kramer, a very similar argument was raised by Mr. Kramer. And while the Supreme Court doesn't directly address it, I can summarize the Supreme Court's discussion of that argument. Give me one moment here. In Kramer, the Supreme Court summarized the argument on page, looks like 501. It said, Kramer argues that line of duty means no more than being on the job. And so that's that broad argument. If anything happened on the job, and
right,
subsequently.
That's exactly right. But then didn't the court say that it has to be, it's not just enough for it to be on the job, it has to be duties peculiar to the job of being a peace officer, in other words, hazardous type duties, right?
Correct. So there was a narrowing from that argument.
Yeah.
Yes.
So did, going back to appellant's argument, did the administrative law judge add a requirement that is not included in statute?
No, the administrative law judge did an exhaustive analysis of the two exclusions and the inclusions, as well as Kramer and Johnson, to interpret the statute as written after amendment and applied that statute as written to the facts of this case. And so there's no additional requirement. The administrative law judge properly recognized the statute could include more, it could include less, and the proper venue for that to be done is at the legislature.
What about the language in the ALJ report that at this time, the statute makes no such provision for death by suicide.
And that seems like broad language, but I don't know if that applies to every hypothetical suicide case. But for the facts of this case, the ALJ applied the statute as written to apply it to the, again, to the statute and the case law that governs, but it, applying it to this hypothetical or to this fact pattern versus all hypotheticals. I don't think she was creating a broad overarching rule. I think she was applying the facts of this case to the statute. I see that my time is up. Did you have any other questions? All right, I think we would just ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And we will turn back to attorney for appellant for rebuttal, and there are 5 minutes on the clock. Please begin when you are ready.
First, Judge, I want to address the question you presented to me at the end of my arguments. If this court looks to Ondler versus Peace Officer Benefit Fund in 1980, you will see a case where it is made clear that there is the definition of what killed in the line of duty is, separate and apart from what might otherwise be excluded from compensability. In that case, an officer, while acting under the strain of an emergency situation, died as a result of a heart attack. There was an exclusion in the statute for heart attacks at that time. In the case, both parties agreed that the officer met the definition of killed in the line of duty. The question was whether the exclusion of heart attacks was valid or invalid, thus precluding compensability from the claim. Definitional language is not exclusionary. Definitional language is not presented in the statute. Only exclusionary language that restricts who might otherwise qualify from being able to receive compensation from the fund. As to the ALJ's treatment of Johnson and Kramer, Your Honors, they disregarded, or the ALJ disregarded the definition and instead erroneously held that the phrase is statutorily defined. This can be seen in page 13, where the judge states, the issue, however, is not whether Deputy Lannan's death was related to his career or caused, in part, by a mental health condition related to his work as a law enforcement officer. Your Honors, that is exactly the definition presented in Johnson and Kramer, and it was disregarded in favor of a non-existent statutory definition. This can also be seen in page 14 of the order, Your Honors, where the judge states, Deputy Lannan suffered from PTSD and depression, and these mental health conditions were contributing factors to his death, according to his death certificate, but PTSD and depression are not themselves fatal conditions and were not the immediate cause. There is no requirement that it be the immediate cause, only that it contribute to the death and be the result of the performance of hazardous duties. There is numerous evidence in the record that Deputy Lannan did in fact perform hazardous duties during his long career as a law enforcement officer. And not only were those duties hazardous, they presented the hazard of being killed. In Aker versus Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Supreme Court determined that the handling of fatalities and other gruesome tasks places such a strain on officers that it can result in fatal heart attacks and other deaths. So, yes, Judge?
I just wanted to go back to your discussion of page 14 of the administrative law judge's report. Focus on footnote 116, which the state focused on. The ALJ seems to be concluding that only a cause of death that was the direct cause or the underlying cause can qualify as a death in the line of duty, and that a contributing cause is not sufficient based on the Department of Health publication about death certificates and cause of death on death certificates. Can you address that footnote and whether the administrative law judge properly analyzed that question?
She did not, Your Honor. In the footnote, it clearly states that other contributing that contributed to the death but did not result in the underlying cause of death. There is no requirement in Johnson v. Kramer, in Johnson or Kramer, that the work-related activities and any injuries they cause be the underlying cause of death. Imagine an officer who is stabbed. 2 weeks later, that stab wound becomes infected, and that kills him. The underlying cause of death would not be the stabbing, it would be the infection. What is important and what this court should look to is the fact that Deputy Lannon performed hazardous duties. Those hazardous duties led to injuries, and those injuries contributed to his death. That is the standard that must be met in a public safety officer benefit case, unless there is an applicable exclusion that excludes the otherwise qualifying death. Neither party asserts that there is an exclusion in the statute, and a requirement that the manner of death be listed in statute is contrary to the 49-year history of the benefit, where it has never happened, Your Honors. For the foregoing reasons, we ask that this court reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, and thanks to the parties as well for the argument here today, as well as the written materials that were submitted. We will take this all under advisement, and we will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe.